Groß hat er, gell?
Gut. Alles gut.
Ja,
wir können anfangen. Aber ich
Großartig.
Glaube, es sei besser in Englisch. Zu mir, es sei leichter als in Deutsch.
Yeah, that's no problem. So, dear Professor Dugin, thank you very much for answering this interview. The first question will be about the difference, and also the main question will be about the difference between unipolarity and the upcoming multipolar world. Can you please explain us the difference between unipolarity and multipolarity?
So first of all, we could identify different levels of both concepts. So we could regard and consider unipolarity and multipolarity on the level first, on the level of ideology or civilization or culture, that is first. Second, on the level of geopolitics. And the third, on the level of the military strategy, on military blocks. So unipolarity was established after the fall of the Soviet Union and the end of bipolar world system. That as well could be interpreted in these three levels. Ideology or civilization, capitalism versus socialism, land power versus sea power, and NATO bloc against Warsaw agreement. So all three levels were present in bipolar system, and that was replaced by unipolar system. After the 91, there was created or established unipolar system with only one ideology: liberal democracy, capitalism, and the liberal and human rights ideology, and that was called globalization. There's this projection of the modern slash postmodern ideology of the West was projected on all the planet without any ideological alternative represented before by Soviet Union. That was the beginning of the unipolar moment in all the senses. First of all, on the first level, that was a projection of liberal democracy and market economy, ideology of human rights, and as well included gender politics, posthumanism, technology, and so on. That was unipolarity. On the level of the geopolitics, that meant projection of the sea power. So everything was submitted and embedded in the system of the dynamic materialist values as they were described, for example, by Helmut Mackinder. So sea power, it is not only military structure, it is economical system, and globalization on the geopolitical level was triumph and radical and absolute, as it seemed at the time, absolute victory of the sea power, of the maritime system, of market society, and that was represented in the famous end of history concept of Francis Fukuyama. On the third level, that was proliferation of NATO, and NATO was the only one military bloc represented the future, the globalism, and globalization, and projection of the Western military power. NATO bases, military bases, or American military bases, that was one and the same, were created through the world, and they continued this expansion of the West against the East in the military level. So unipolar moment was the system established when there was no other pole to resist or to oppose to this sea power, liberal democracy, and military presence of NATO and its allies on the global scale. And, but this system, unipolar system, began to be shaken, to shake and break apart just in the beginning of 2000s. That the symbol of that was the attack against World Trade Center, coming to power of Vladimir Putin in Russia, and transformation of the politics of the China. So there was the religious challenge and terrorist attack against the pole, one of the only one pole against unipolarity by Islam political extremism. Russia began to resist on the geopolitical level, still having nuclear weapon, and Putin began to insist more and more and more on sovereignty of the and independence and the freedom of the rests of the previous second pole, and China began to rise and to affirm more and more its independence from the West, trying to use the opportunities opened by globalization. But China began to separate globalism and globalization, rejecting the one and accepting the second for the interests of China. So that was the beginning of the new system, already third system of multipolarity to be established. And multipolarity is new concept and new structure on all three levels. First of all, ideologically, that is based on the pluralism of civilizations. So that was a kind of realization of fulfillment of the provisions of the Samuel Huntington about the clash of civilizations. So there were new poles with the identity rooted not in the formal modern political ideology, but in the depth of the cultures and historical experience of different civilizations. So many poles as there are civilizations, as the number of civilizations. The first, there was one of the civilization, but not something universal, Western, modern, postmodern civilization, Russian, Orthodox, Christian civilization, more conservative, and Chinese civilization, or at least three, but Islamic civilization tried to affirm itself, and there were as well the possibility to separation inside of the West between American civilization and European civilization, inside of Western civilization, a Latin American civilization as possible, Indian civilization, and African civilization. So Indian civilization as well was more or less formed during Modi's rule in India. So on the ideological level, that was resistance against universalist pattern of liberal democracy, market society, and modern, postmodern Western system of values. Rejection was general, but affirmation was different. Russia opposed to it. Russian conservatives, Orthodox, maybe collectivist form of Russian identity. China opposed its own sovereignty, its own civilization. Islam opposed Islamic religious values, and so on. Europe opposed not so much values, but much more economical interest, its financial sovereignty, or efforts to form a special agenda inside of the West at lesser scale. But nevertheless, that was ideological level of these civilizations, with insistence on the possibility to create independent civilizational system of values, independent cultures, and independent political, economical, social, cultural, religious system, rejecting, for example, hegemony of the gender politics and Western ideological universal liberal democracy. China, for example, has no election, the so-called liberal democracy in political way. Russia has its own system of values, rejection of gay pride and universalization of the gay marriages and so on. Everybody rejecting its own way, but rejecting unipolar system on the ideological level. At the same time, there was reaffirmation of heartland against sea power, but this time that was not only one heartland, as represented by Russian Empire in the time of Mackinder and or Soviet Union and bipolar system. That was rather distributed heartland. So all civilizations try to find their heartland, their earth power. That was the continental China, continental India, continental Europe, with Merkel, for example, as economical example of that. And Trump's America. Trump's America was American heartland, really manifested in the middle of the ocean, or in the middle of the sea power. That was emergence of this American heartland and globalists, the representative of unipolarity and sea power, were totally bewildered by emergence of this inner continent, inner heartland, inner land power inside of North America, and not outside. So that was more or less geopolitical meaning of multipolarity. And that was as well creation of alternative to NATO military blocs. For example, alliance between Russia and Iran, Russian-Turkish-Iranian alliance in Syria, Russian-Chinese exercises in the military way, and this possible split of NATO. That was all prefigured already in the previous years. So, but multipolarity, multipolar system is not definitely established, not achieved, it is not finalized, it is in progress. So this exchange, this replacement of unipolarity by multipolarity is ongoing process. And unipolarists, globalists, they try still to destroy, to subvert this process, try to insist on their previous agenda, and that is precisely the meaning of Great Reset. Great Reset, seemingly the last attack of agonizing unipolarity against emerging multipolarity, and the idea of Schwab in Davos meeting of Joe Biden with his slogan "Build Back Better." It is the demonstration of the will of globalists on unipolarists to continue their agenda and to expand globalization as before, as in time of the unipolar moment, demonizing all representatives of the multipolarity, external to United States, as Putin, Xi Jinping, Iranians, Erdogan, Eastern Europe, Orban, and everybody who contradicts this globalist agenda, or Trump, or inside of United States, internal representatives of multipolarity, as Trump and Trumpists, that insist on the American values and American political system against this globalist vision of the future. So now that is where we are. There we are inside of the last stage of the fight between ongoing and multipolarity in progress and already belonging to the past, the last counter-attack of unipolarists and globalists represented by this fraudulent so-called victory of Joe Biden in the United States.
You already spoke about the demonization of upcoming multipolarity by proponents of unipolarity. And what comes to my mind there is that some Western analysts actually suggest that it's not an upcoming multipolarity we are witnessing, but an upcoming bipolarity between the West on the one hand and China on the other hand, because as they argue, is that Russia and all the other parts of the axis of resistance, or better said, of the upcoming multipolar world, they are for their own too weak in order to form an own civilization, and that China is much more powerful and therefore draws all these powers in its orbit and is actually going to promote its own kind of universalism. So in this respect, it would be interesting to know why, in your eyes and your view, there is no upcoming bipolarity, but a multipolarity. And what do you think about this thesis that it is actually China becoming some kind of new Soviet Union and a new pole of a bipolar world and not a multipolar world?
I consider this opinion a very weak opinion and not corresponding to the reality. China is, without any doubt, the most powerful pole opposing Western hegemony, but it lacks to China many features to be the full-scale alternative pole. Military weakness, there is some military weakness of China. There is absence of universal vision, and there is a kind of lack of the experience that we Russians have, for example, to propose to the humanity some universal system of values. But I don't doubt that China economically and as well on civilizational, deep civilizational level is the most clear example of this pole, but not only one. Taken isolatedly, without other poles, China could not resist the pressure of globalists. So China absolutely existentially needs some other poles. And that is why China tries to organize the new allies with Islamic world on one hand, with African countries on the other, with Latin America countries on the third level. But the most an essential ally for China is Putin's Russia, with nuclear weapon, with huge amount of resources and with political and historical tradition to resist the Western pressure. So Russia is absolutely indispensable element of the new post-unipolar system, and it is almost the pole. The other, so I consider Russia and China two almost finalized poles already. Russia on the military and historical and political way, with the values, with the resources, with the sovereignty, with military power, and China with on the economical level, with cultural particularity and deep roots of multi-thousand years Chinese culture. So we have almost completed poles, and not two, but three, the Western, and two anti-Western. It is not already bipolarity, it is already three polarity at least. But we could not afford three polarity because there is a huge amount of Muslim population that they could not fit neither into Western sphere of ideological influences. Totally different. Islamic identity is totally different. They could not follow Chinese path. They could not be integrated and as a whole Islamic culture inside of Russian model that is much more Christian and Orthodox. So there is already the fourth continent, Islamic continent. There is Indian culture, that is fifth continent, and India with 2 billion of people, and its dynamic of economical and industrial and political affirmation of sovereignty, it's the other poles creating. Maybe Latin America will fall on that, and Africa as well. So we have much more than two poles, and China is without any doubts the leading power, but I think that China shares today some leadership already with Russia, and that is represented in the greater Eurasian project between Xi Jinping and Putin. Both Russian and Chinese leaders agree on this necessity to cooperate in order to establish multipolarity, not bipolarity, China versus West or Russia versus West. We could not afford that. It is not realistic. So in order to deal effectively against unipolarity that still represents the major power, more powerful than China or Russia taken isolatedly, separately. So we need this multipolarity. That is the pick and cherry strategy in some way, as in the Wizard of Oz. What cannot accomplish one of the group of these people coming to the diamond Diamond City on the yellow road, yellow brick road, they could, because everybody lacks, every figure, every personage lacks something, the heart, the braveness, the brain, the other things. But together, they could afford to accomplish what they could not accomplish separately. So it is a pick and cherry strategy. Russia invests military power, huge resources, big territory, historical experience. China invests huge amount of financial system, its ancient culture. Islamic country invest their political will and religious will to fight against unbelievers and Dajjal. India or in West, its contemplative civilization replied based centered on inner spiritual visions. So Latin America invests its search of new identity, its dynamical and plastical culture. South Africa invests its population, its growing economy, its rediscovered identities inside of African continent, and everybody that is the France picking cherry strategy that could end hegemony of the modern postmodern West, not against the West, but in favor of multipolarity. The West has a chance, still has a chance, to affirm and to defend and to develop its own identity, but not as something unique. It is only the part of the humanity. It's not the talus of the humanity. The humanity has no destiny to become the West. Humanity has the destiny to become what the cultures with in plural and civilizations in plural wants to become. We multipolarity, it is multitude of the telos. It is teleological pluriversality, pluriversum of different pluricentrist vision of telos, of the end, of the goal of the development. And either the West accepts this pluricentric teleology, or everybody outside of the West will destroy the West. That is the war. That is the war, not against the West, against globalists. And multipolarity is a kind of new geopolitical, cultural, and military strategical idea. Multipolarity is first of all idea, and there are and they can be the partisans of this idea, including in the West itself, who refuse this globalist agenda, a Great Reset, Joe Biden, and this dictatorship of left, far left liberalism represented today, a new kind of totalitarianism by high tech, big data, big tech, and big finance. This unholy alliance between big finance, big tech, and big farm, they represent a new form of liberal totalitarianism. And there are so many tendencies inside of the West who reject, who refuse it. So we could count on them. They are also the representative of multipolar West, because the West could be very important, maybe leading, but on pole in the multipolar structure, but in the multipolar and not accomplishing the role, playing the role of the only one civilization imposed unalternatively on all other humanity, who clearly reject Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and new American administration. They are criminals. They should be judged and destroyed. Not America, but this fraudulent group of usurpers of the power in the beautiful and splendid American nation. They have hijacked American elections. They have hijacked America. They should pay for that.
Mm-hmm. What is from a Western perspective always very interesting is this mention of Islamic civilization as a new pole in the multipolar world, especially in populist parties. People have some strange conception of Islam as some kind of monolithic bloc, which has no inner differences, and various civilizations inside Islamic civilization. Could you please elaborate on the differences inside Islamic civilizations? For example, there is Turkey under Erdogan, who has an own civilization, and on the other hand, for example, Iran with Shia Islam.
So I think that the general vision of Islam in the West is totally wrong, because it is not unified civilization. There is some common principles for all the Muslims, but that is very multipolar civilization in itself. There is Shia pole that is strongly opposed to radical Sunnism. And they, for example, the Shia don't recognize the radical Sunnism, for example, Salafism or Wahhabism as Islam at all. They call them takfiris, who have betrayed the faith, the belief. And the Salafis, the radical Sunni, respond with the same regarding Shia. So they don't consider Shia to be the part of Muslims. So there are huge and a deep split inside of Islamic civilization. There are many, many poles of this civilization. The main pole of Shiism is obviously Iran, Iran and most important pole of the Sunni Islam are the Turkey, Erdogan's Turkey, doubled with nationalism, traditional or imperialism of Ottoman style. It is not not unique and only one form of Islam. It's one of the form of Sunni Islam. There is Saudi Arabia and Gulf country that represent totally, almost totally different version of Islam. There is Egyptian Islam, also different from Saudi and Gulf countries Islam and Turkish Islam. There is Maghreb Islam. There is Pakistani on Indonesian Islam. So we have, there is the huge amount of Muslims in India, above all in northern India. So we have the poles, the multitude of the poles inside of Islam, and sometimes they are so different, they rather belong to different civilizations. For example, there is Eurasian Islam of Russia that is the integral part of our identity. There are some Muslims groups, not Uyghurian, but the other inside of China, who are totally and perfectly integrated in Chinese society. So there are Indian Islam who are the part of the part of the Indian civilization. So there is very, very, very differentiated structure of Islam. This caricatural version or vision of Islam as something total and something unique, something that is totally united and trying to destroy Western civilization, and represented by ISIS and other extremist Salafi group, is totally wrong, but it has some reality. First of all, it is the image desired by the globalists. They tried to transform the Islam in the enemy and inside the West to fight against Islam. That was called Islamofascism by Francis Fukuyama. It's totally wrong, it's crazy name, but it is a kind of tool for globalists to unite the West against the imagined enemy. And that is something that doesn't exist. There is a kind of a real problem with the radical Salafi group in Islam, who were the tools of the geopolitics of the CIA and the United States of America during Cold War. They were used against pro-Soviet tendencies in the Islamic world, and they still are under control of the CIA, and they are used in order to organize some provocation, some terrorist act, in order to get some results, some conclusions, political, economical, on the side in the Western society or elsewhere. So, for example, during Chechen War, United States and CIA hugely supported these Salafi and radical terrorist Islamic group against Putin. They presented them as the heroes, but when they attacked, the same group attacked, for example, United States, they are described as terrorists and devils. So that is double standard system that we should take in consideration as well. There is the natural process of the loss of the identity among the Muslims coming to live in the United States or Europe. They are lost because they cut the ties with their cultures and their society. They are integrated in the totally perverted and degenerated Western civilization. They are losing their identity. They are transformed in something in between, in some monsters. They are not anymore the real Muslims, and they are not Westerners. So they are in the middle of that, and they obtain and they assume a kind of perverted artificial Islam. It is not traditional Islam. It is not Western culture. It is something in between. So ISIS is some kind of using the use of publicity, of commercial form of promotion, some simulacrum of Islam. So this simulacrum is a kind of degeneration of the Islam outside of its natural limits. So we should not blame for that Islamic immigrants. We need to blame for that the liberal system, globalization, who have brought these poor Muslims inside. They put them inside of the Western hell. And when they are losing their identity, we should welcome them to return to their national Islamic motherland and to prosper and build their own civilization and society. Not because they are bad or evil, but because they become bad being put in this decadent society of the West. We need to save them and not save us from them. Returning to the roots, if that will be accepted, we will be obliged to promote the return to the roots of the Western societies as well, to the Western culture. So we should not liberate not the Westerners from the Muslims. We should liberate both. And first of all, we need start with our common or mutual liberation from globalists. Let us liberate ourselves from globalism, from liberalism, from Joe Biden, from Kamala Harris, from Democrat Party, from Facebook, from Google, from Twitter, from Instagram, from TikTok, from World Health Organization and all globalists and global rulers. We need to overcome and destroy global financial and political elite. And Muslims and Europeans, the real Europeans with roots and identity, they should fight together against the common enemy. And after that, we will establish the balanced and peaceful world without this hegemony of the sea power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Professor Dugin, thank you very much for the interview. I would kindly ask you then to send me the recording, please, of the interview. And I will then transcribe it. We will translate it into German. And as soon as it's ready, I will then send you the first issue of Agora. And then you can see the interview in a written form.